Welcome to Cheers to This, the podcast where meaningful conversation meets a good drink. I'm Jay Hutchins, your host, and I'm joined today by our guest, Brandon. And Brandon knows about the intersections between activism and joy, and he's going to tell us all about it today. But first, you should grab yourself a glass and join the conversation with us. Hi, Brandon. How's it going?
Hey, I'm good, Jay. It's nice to see you and hanging out with you and talking about really fun stuff today. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too. But I've got to ask you a super important question first. Brandon, what is in your glass?
So today we have cold brew coffee. Honestly, I'm a caffeine addict, so I want me some coffee. So that's what I'm gonna be drinking or sipping on today.
I love it. I'm rocking just a peach smash with vodka in it. So don't mind me getting a little loose. So Brandon, do you have anything to cheers to today?
Yes, I would love to cheers to my queer disabled community. You are loved, you are seen, and you're worthy.
Cheers to that. Absolutely.
Oh, that's good.
So you did a cheers to the queer disabled community, and I love that. So I guess that brings me to my first question for you, Brandon. How would you describe the type of activism that you actually do?
I think I have chosen the anecdote route. I love to talk about my experiences going into the dating world, especially like on dating apps. I think for me, the power of story helped start a lot of conversations. And honestly, it's helped me connect with a lot of people on TikTok primarily. I think I personally started it to feel more comfortable talking about the intersection of my queerness and also my disability. Because for a long time, there has always been a disconnect between the two identities for me. And when I came to terms, of being a gay man, at the same time, I also had to come to terms with being a disabled man. And I think that friction or dissonance for a long time really kind of messed me up. And I would say the theme of my 20s have always been like a roller coaster. So once I started speaking about it and almost like practicing, like if I'm comfortable speaking about my disability and also being gay on camera, I can do that on dates. I could do that in my conversations on dating apps and not feel like any sort of shame around it. And I think what I found was my disability became almost like a filter. I was filtering through a lot of people that weren't worth my time who, like, once they found out about my disability to be frank, I started on dating apps with not really disclosing my disability at first. Ooh. I would kind of wait in the middle of the conversation to be like, hey, you know, now that you love my personality and everything, there's this thing I got to talk about. But then I found that once I mentioned my disability in like my bio of my profile, I started receiving more like genuine messages from people who, at least they were going into the conversation knowing, I have a disability that is not necessarily an issue. But then also people would just swipe away once they saw that. And I was just like, thank God that you helped me save my time because I'm 31. I'm not getting any younger.
I think that's quite interesting that you noticed that there was like friction between the identities and you tried to lean into one more than the other and then back. And then you tried to find the happy medium. How did you actually find that happy medium between the identities where they're much more cohesive than, you know, at odds with each other?
I wish I can say there was a method. There really wasn't. I honestly think it was time and experience. And like the majority of my dating happened a little bit later in my life just because I went to a Christian college. So it was in this context of like censorship. So, and I was always afraid to talk about it. But I did find my pockets of friends that accepted me and didn't treat me any different. But at the same time, having this kind of censored life in that context was really hard. So it wasn't until maybe like 24, 25 that I really dove in deep into the dating world. And it wasn't until, how old was I? 29, 30, somewhere around there.
The math is mathing.
Yeah. Where like now I'm experiencing my first relationship with my first boyfriend. I mean, I've been in like past situationships, but I don't really like count that as actual relationship experience. But honestly, I think maybe it's cliche, but time kind of heals some wounds, not all of them. Some of them are still scars that you kind of see every now and then. But at the same time, I think that's what kind of created who I am right now. as of today and how I like present myself and how I speak about myself.
You know, I can't fault you for leaning into the cliche because it's true for so many things in life that all it takes is that bit of time and maybe some perspective, yeah, you know, to balance things out. You know, so I absolutely get that. Now, when it comes to your dating, most people would not make that a central focus of conversation that they have to the public on a frequent basis, but you have. So I'm curious, would you say it's important, like when finding a niche in activism, to like lean into your passions and kind of where your voice aligns? Or do you think just a broad approach is better for most people?
I think the way I approached it was, if I would be speaking with a younger version of myself, what would I want to see or at least look up to in terms of if I wanted to, you know, reach this version of myself now where I feel, I'm not going to say 100% peace, but I do feel a lot more confident in the person that I am today. I still have my days, but I think it wasn't necessarily a niche I like chose. I chose to speak to myself and what I personally wanted to heal. By accident, I found people experiencing those same wounds and I just kept talking about it. And for me, I think at least with TikTok or social media in general, whoever connects with your content is going to find you. And for me, I was just talking to myself. It was like a digital diary for me, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just hoping that I would come across people who felt the same. And, you know, after doing this for about like, I want to say 2.5 years, maybe going on 3 now, because it's like more of a recent journey for me. I've really come across so many people who, you know, have the same intersection of being queer and also disabled and also wanting to date and finding romance. And I think for me, those are really, I don't want to say universal topics, but they're really big topics that, you know, dating, we're talking about that all the time on social media. So I just kind of found a pocket that was authentic to myself. And coincidentally, I found people who were feeling the same.
When I think about the content that you make, it's authentic as all get out. It's insanely authentic and honest. Every time I see a video from you, it's a moment of, one, what is Brandon going to say? And two, you know, what truth bomb is he going to drop this time? And I just really respect how authentic it is. When you think about authenticity, how important is it for you to balance, you know, the realness of the ups and downs of the actual dating world, you know, when you actually make that content?
When I'm speaking on camera, again, I really focus on like a younger version of myself. And I'm often speaking to my very specific aspects of pain, because I think when people speak about their pain, it often has more of a broad, you know, resonance with the people. For me, I just kind of start there, and I don't know, I guess I connect with people on that sort of level. But I think the foundation of a lot of what I speak about or the content that I put up is focusing on such a human level. At the end of the day, we're all humans, no matter what shape, anything, that wherever we come from, that sort of thing. I think as long as I keep that as a reminder of just like, we're all human, we all, you know, seek happiness, we all seek comfort, stability, and all of those things. I think drawing on those like universal concepts helps at least me construct a message that feels authentic to me, and I hope it comes off at authentic to other people. So yeah, I think often I just kind of speak about what has been very painful for me.
You do go and lean into the pain. You definitely do that. But you also lean into the joy of it, because there's one thing about you is that when you're happy about something, the world knows. And I love that. And you have like one of the best giggles I've ever heard. So when you get happy, I look for it. I'm like, oh yeah, Brandon's in a having a moment and I'm here for it. Makes me want to kick my feet up in the air and just giggle with you. So it's so good. Like when you're in your activism, I know, you know, there's a balance that you have to kind of find where you're honest about the struggles and the pain, but how do you actually interweave that joy in there? Because you do it pretty well.
I guess it just really relies on the topic. at hand. One video, I'm talking about statistics about a disability in LGBT communities. And then another video, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm like so happy I see my boyfriend or something. Yeah. So I think you bring up a really good point, though. Most of the time with disability stories, especially when it's coming from an able-bodied point of view, it really focuses on the struggle of disability and how hard life is. That's mm-hmm. true, but also I think there is merit to the, like you were saying, the joy in disabled people's lives. Like, it's there. Obviously, I think we all have struggles, but I think it's also important to highlight the happiness that we do feel. And also knowing that joy is possible in the midst of a lot of this pain and in the midst of a lot of this chaos, because at least for me, and just to be frank, and I've spoken about this on social media, there was mm-hmm. a point in my mid-20s where I fell into a deep depression. Mm-hmm. And I really conceptualized disability as this is the worst card that I was dealt. And it was really hard to get out of that frame of reference, because I think what I mistakenly did was created a frame of reference that was so narrow that it only focused on pain. Mm. But when I gone through therapy, did my work on myself, I was able to like look through a different window. I'm like, oh my gosh, there was sunshine this entire time. But it takes so much work to like turn your head and pivot and focus on something that you're not used to focusing on. And sometimes pain becomes very familiar and very comfortable. And you have this like cyclical sadness that really has a hold on you. But I just want to let people know that there is another window to look through. I know it takes time to like turn your head, but it's there.
I love that you did the actual work. Like, you don't understand. That's one thing that so many people struggle with acknowledging that it's time to do. You know, they're like, I'm struggling. I'm feeling this pain. And then the easy thing to do sometimes is to just let it consume you. Mm-hmm. But like when you're in the middle of that pain and to push through and do the work, that's something special there. It really is. When you think about the work that you did, what do you feel? Do you feel proud? Do you feel relief? What do you feel about it?
Girl, I feel tired. No, I'm kidding.
Understandable.
I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It took years, to get to a place of where I can smile and laugh with you right here on camera. Mm-hmm. It takes so much work. Yes, I do feel proud of myself. I also want to say that I know the journey is still ongoing. It hasn't stopped. I think it's more about the journey rather than the destination, because mm-hmm. A really good thing my therapist told me, because I used to be this very like black and white person where it has to be a certain way and there's no middle ground sometimes. I'm still like that sometimes, but she told me that there's a difference between happiness and content or contentment. Mm-hmm. If you are really pursuing these extremes of emotions, you're always going to feel erratic and you're always going to feel like you're on a roller coaster. But if you remain content somewhere in the middle where this is like a happy neutrality, then you will be able to bounce back from a lot of the pressures and some of the unanticipated circumstances that we deal with. And I'm like, oh my gosh, in my mind, I was like, I have to be happy. Why am I not happy? It's not about that. It's about kind of being in the middle and, you know, kind of teetering in this neutral ground where I'm like, oh, I think I learned something.
That's amazing, because happiness is not an actual state of being. Like mm-hmm. No one is always happy. It's an emotion. It's a great emotion, but just always being there, it's impossible. And I think that's what gets a lot of us in so much trouble, is that we chase happiness consistently to the point where we can't appreciate where we've come from. We can't appreciate how much we've done and survived. We can't appreciate the moment we're in now. And, you know, because we're always chasing and chasing and chasing. So I love that you have that perspective, and good on your therapist. Keep that name secret, you know, just in case people try to scoop her up. So just going back to your activism really quickly, I'm curious, what is one thing people don't understand about the activism that you do?
I think it's important to acknowledge the difference between, oh, you're only an activist if you're physically doing something. It can also be telling your story. You can be sharing resources. And that's very important, especially in the disability context. There are such a variety of disabilities that, you know, it creates constraint on mobility. Some people are in wheelchairs. Some people, you know, they have limb differences. So activism is not always going to look like someone running in a marathon or someone, you know, physically protesting, because sometimes that is not safe for some disabled individuals, including myself. Like, I don't necessarily have the physical strength to, you know, protect myself if needed. Mm-hmm. So at least for me, I classify my activism more about community outreach or even sharing any like knowledge or resources that I have. But I do want to state that my disability awareness advocacy didn't necessarily start until I started working for a nonprofit called Arthrogryposis Multiplex Congenita Support Inc. It's very long, but the short is AMC Support. And they support individuals who have my condition, arthrogryposis. And it wasn't until I started working for them and I became their creative director. So I was focused on a lot of like fundraising, marketing, communications. And from there, I started seeing how stories can be the vehicle for so much change. Because oftentimes people don't learn unless they're told a story or, you know, hear something that they can like mutually connect with. And once that connection is made, their eyes are, they're more open to a lot of things, or their mind is open to a lot of things.
Yeah, I get that. You know, that story is the gateway for the possibilities of what's to come and how you can educate them. Because you just start throwing facts at people sometimes and you can see the light just dim.
Oh, yeah.
But give them a good story, it gives them something to connect to. So I totally get that. But when we're talking about good stories, we have to talk about something important here, Brandon. You tell stories through music, sir.
I do.
And I want to talk about that. So you make music, and the music you make in songs like How to Overthink and How to Know You're Loved, they seem to walk the line between confessional struggles and pure joy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how important is it for you to walk that line in your art?
Again, I kind of, the truth is, I've created a lot of music for my own healing. And a lot of it is to reflect on a lot of emotions that I've internalized a lot. That was the root of a lot of my struggle in my mid-20s. I internalized so much emotion because a part of my brain was like, I can't feel because I have so much to take care of. But putting off so much of the internalized feelings was actually, a ticking time bomb. I was going to implode at a certain point because there was too much pressure internally. So at least for me, when I go and record music, I go in thinking to myself, what haven't I resolved personally? I think taking How to Overthink, for example, I'm an overthinker. But also a portion of that song also talks about people pleasing. I'm a recovering people pleaser, where saying no was very hard because I felt like I had to do everything or contribute so that way I felt value. And as a disabled person, I think I was always searching, how am I valuable? How am I worthy? And I thought that it had to be through my works. It wasn't necessarily like through anything else, but any tangible thing that I can do for people. So I'm at a point now where like sometimes no, like feels really good. I have a hard time sometimes, but no is very needed for your own like personal well-being. And then How to Know You're Loved, to that song particularly, that one I'm still working on. So in that song, I speak about, yes, I'm being actively loved by someone. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend does a really great job at having those reminders and making me feel loved. But at the same time, this insecurity that still takes residence in my mind constantly I'm always questioning, why do you love me? Why do you stay in the relationship? I feel like I'm not enough. And that comes from like many years of putting myself in a comparative state of with other people, especially in the LGBT community, where there's a certain ideal that a lot of people, go for, pursue. Mm-hmm. And I never necessarily was one of those ideals or even was put in that category. But that's to say, like, that category really holds no weight nor value. That's just something that people have created. Why am I putting myself on that barometer of measurement when I'm following my own standards and expectations? But I'm not going to say that, like, oh, I'm fully healed and I'm so good at it. I think there are some days where I'm horrible at it. And that's what that song is about, where I let those horrible messages leak into my mind. And then I start questioning, oh, does my boyfriend really love me? Does he really view me as desirable? And those are things that I struggle through, especially starting dating and then being in this relationship. So anyone out there who's listening to this, just because you get into a relationship, it doesn't solve your problems. You still need to do your work.
It's true. Wait, are you saying that having a boyfriend is not the magic pill?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because I struggle.
Listen, not to be selfish, but if the music continues to be as good as it is, I wouldn't mind you not healing completely for a little bit longer. Just saying. Just throwing that out there.
I know, they'll keep coming.
Okay, good. Okay, take your time. We'll be patient for now. But how important for you, when you do release this new album, for the theme to be as universal as possible? Or is it going to be very specific to your experience in this moment?
No, I think my personal thing is I love specificity. I think it creates questions. I think when I'm very specific about something, I think it becomes more intriguing. Obviously, like, universal messages helps you create that broad connection. But I think when it comes to specificity, it creates more of a unique story. And for me, I'm just concentrating on what is, again, genuinely and authentically coming from my heart, and what do I feel most drawn to. And if my music finds a home in other people's, like, houses, radios, their Spotify accounts, I'm also on Apple Music and Tidal, and yeah. if people gravitate toward it, great. If not, maybe there's something else in my discography that you might like. But I think for me, what's important is that I sing about things that are true, and I sing about things that help me grow and heal.
So growing and healing through your music, growing and healing through your activism, just growing and healing seems like a major theme for you. I'm curious, does that mean that your approach to activism also influences your music, or do you just kind of view them completely separately?
No, totally. I personally consider, like, my music as an easy way for someone to, like, walk through the door to my activism, because I think at least it's a very, very non-confrontational way of opening the door to that conversation. And once they get to know more of my personality, they can kind of see the aspects that I do tackle and that are really close to my heart. I think my time with the nonprofit that I was working with, also hearing a lot of other people's stories and how they navigated their disability and what they struggle through, also kind of, like, informed my worldview of what disability means. And I'm just like, wow, you know, for a long time, and interestingly enough, a huge portion of my childhood, I was always around able-bodied people. I never really had disabled friends. I never really heard other disabled stories other than maybe on the news. And it wasn't until, like, my late 20s that I started connecting with this community a lot more. And I'm like, wow, I am not alone in this struggle. But also, it's very interesting to see, like, even if I have the same diagnosis as another person, we still have two totally separate stories. And I think that just kind of helps me understand the world around me a lot better, and also contributes to, like, again, to the specificity of my own story, where I'm just like, oh, I remember I felt this way about a certain topic, but another disabled person disagreed with me about it, which is fine, because we should all have our own thoughts about things. But I'm like, it's so interesting how, even though we may be cut from a similar cloth, we still end up very differently.
Yeah, that's the joy, though, of life, right? Yeah. And the joy of community, actually, because when you bring together all those different perspectives and voices, it just creates something powerful. Mm-hmm. And helps other people find their space, right?
Yeah.
Because I know you talk about in your activism and in your music how you think about your younger self and how alone you felt and how what you needed. Just think about all those voices that need the community spaces that you're in to be available for them. Like it makes a difference to have everyone at the table.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, Brandon, I have got to ask you one last question. Where the heck can people find you?
I exist everywhere. So if you're interested in disability awareness and advocacy, my primary platform for that would be TikTok at Brandonisms. And I will be telling so many more stories on there. But yeah, you can also find that content on YouTube and Instagram. And then for my music at Brandon Dylan, BRNDN. DYLN, because Brandon Dylan with vowels was taken, but I know, right? Yeah, I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, literally any streaming platform that you listen to music on, I exist there. And then also my sister and I have a digital creative business, and we also have like a little podcast of our own on YouTube. We are at The Biggie Collective, where we talk about marketing, and because we love marketing and like pop culture and how that like intertwines. So yeah, you can find me all over there, and I hope to see you there.
Awesome. Well, Brandon, before we go, I just want to have one more cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers to finding peace where there's friction.
Oh, that's good. Cheers to that.
Thank you so much for your time and for opening our eyes to, you know, the value of activism and joy. And thank you to all the listeners that listen in and enjoyed a drink with us today. So just cheers to this. And thanks so much for everyone for joining.